Capital Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sams, saluting its client Seaside Community Development Corporation for supporting arts and culture in South Walton County. I'm David Powell of Hopping Green and Sams in Tallahassee.
The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire someone with a disability. More information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of abilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. And from the Florida Historic Capital Museum, presenting Navigating New Worlds, Identity, Perception, and Politics in Florida, an exhibit showcasing rare maps and prints from the Michael W. and Dr. Linda Fisher collection. Information at flhistoriccapital.gov. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Is it time for Florida's teachers to get pay raises? Governor Rick Scott says yes.
I believe in merit pay. I believe in measurement. I believe in accountability. And we're going to continue to work on that. But right now, the right thing to do is an across-the-board pay raise for all of our full-time teachers.
It seems to be all about education this week as the governor and teachers push a new system that lets students learn algebra even while they're on Facebook.
So if you're factoring a polynomial after football practice at 11 o'clock at night, and you can't remember what your teacher taught you that morning, you would have the opportunity to get help then and there.
Could the state face another day in court with new proposed changes to its pension system? And some say after more than 30 years, it's about time the legislature steps up and passes meaningful ethics reform. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. Full-time public school teachers in Florida could see their incomes rise later this year if Governor Rick Scott gets his way. The governor is proposing a $2,500 pay raise, but as Lynn Hatter reports, it has to make it through the legislature first.
There was some buzz about it, some teachers talking about it and discussing it, and of course...
Farrah Donaldson teaches English and history at Wakulla High School. He's halfway through his first year as a full-time teacher after having served as a teacher's assistant for the past 2 years. And as a TA, he says he got to work with a lot of teachers and saw firsthand how much of their own money they have to invest into their classrooms. Now he finds himself doing similar things for his students.
There are certain allotments for classrooms, but usually it doesn't go as far as maybe it should. If I see something that will help my students, I think will help the classroom, so I will just pick it up. Sometimes you can be reimbursed for that, and other times it's just not really a big deal because it's for the students, and that's what's really important.
But those odds and ends add up, and teachers, like other state employees, are dealing with smaller paychecks as a result of new pension contribution requirements, in addition to the expiration of federal payroll breaks. Many haven't gotten raises in several years, so Governor Rick Scott's proposal for an across-the-board $2,500 pay raise for full-time educators is being greeted with enthusiasm from those like Donaldson.
It's pretty good news. It's always exciting to get any kind of pay raise.
The governor estimates it would cost the state about $480 million. Scott, who strongly supported a bill passed 2 years ago tying teacher pay to student performance, says he still believes in merit pay. But he also thinks the right thing to do now is give teachers a salary boost.
I believe in merit pay. I believe in measurement. I believe in accountability. And we're going to continue to work on that. But right now, the right thing to do is an across-the-board pay raise for all of our full-time teachers.
During his first year in office, Scott oversaw the passage of a law abolishing tenure for new teachers and tying their evaluations to student performance. Those evaluations will determine whether teachers keep their jobs and how much money they'll make. Lawmakers cut the education budget by $1 billion. But after an outcry from the public over the education cuts, last year Scott urged lawmakers to put the money back, which they did. And he's been reaching out to teachers and their unions to get feedback on the state's botched rollout of the evaluations and ways to help schools improve. Some have questioned whether the governor's support of public school teachers is aimed at boosting his low approval ratings and gaining teacher support ahead of his 2014 re-election bid.
Governor Scott has a daughter who's a teacher, and her teaching background has been with students who sometimes are very difficult to deal with, students who have disabilities of one kind or another. I think he comes at his feelings about education, honestly.
Senate President Don Gates dismisses the notion that Scott is making a political move. In 2014, the governor could face former Governor Charlie Crist, now a Democrat who bucked his former Republican Party when he vetoed a Senate proposal that tied teacher pay to student performance and banned tenure. In doing so, Crist angered Republicans but won applause and support from teachers and their union during his failed congressional bid. The proposed teacher pay raises are also getting a thumbs up from the state's largest teachers union, the Florida Education Association. Union President Andy Ford says he's cautiously optimistic about the governor's proposal.
We're starting from behind, so this is a good step. It is in the right direction.
But Scott's proposed teacher raises could face some challenges in the House. House Speaker Will Weatherford says he's more supportive of a pay raise tied to teacher performance.
And I just think that should be a part of the conversation, but we are very happy that the governor is prioritizing education funding. We look forward to working with him on it.
When the state passed the merit pay legislation 2 years ago, it failed to fund the merit pay part of the law. Meanwhile, other state employees could also see salary increases. It's been about 6 years since they've had a raise, and support for some kind of boost is growing, although lawmakers disagree on whether all or a few state employees should be eligible for it. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
This morning, educators and Governor Rick Scott kicked off a new system that lets Florida students get free algebra help while they Facebook. From member station WMNF in Tampa, Janelle Irwin reports, Algebra Nation is a statewide service created for schools by the University of Florida and a private company called Study Edge that interfaces mobile apps and social media.
A simple algebra problem headlined the white smartboard in the library at Dixie Hollins High School in Kenneth City. A student solved it, and the answer, 52, was symbolic. That's the percentage of high school freshmen who don't pass their end-of-year assessments in Algebra 1. Donald Pemberton is the director of the Lastinger Center for Learning and College of Education at the University of Florida. He said teachers came to him and asked for help.
Number one, they had incredible concerns that almost half of their students were failing to pass the end-of-course exam in algebra, which is a state exam. And if you fail to pass that exam, you fail to get credit for the course. And then your whole academic progress is stymied.
Unlike some homework help services, the Algebra Nation program is free for students and to schools. Pemberton said it's also available 24/7, which works better for high school students who have increasingly unpredictable schedules.
So if you're factoring a polynomial after football practice at 11 o'clock at night and you can't remember what your teacher taught you that morning, you would have the opportunity to get help then and there.
Teachers can also use the online tool to improve their curriculum. Governor Rick Scott spoke with a teacher who has 100% pass rate in her algebra class. He said even teachers with high success rates can benefit from the extra help.
She saw that the tool allowed her to see other teaching methods and improved her ability to reach more students. Alicia also said that not all students got the highest grade, and although they passed, this tool might help them score higher. She also noted that the same day her students started using the program, two students who had never raised their hands in class were very active on the program. It sparked something in these kids who otherwise would have remained silent.
UF partnered with Study Edge to put the program together. That company specializes in creating online content for college students. Ethan Fieldman is their president and co-founder. He said the project cost UF about $400,000, and it built on tools that were already available.
We took this platform that works for college students, we adapted it for high school students, we added end-of-course exam practice tools that look like the end-of-course exam, and we built out better mobile apps and just kind of customized it. And actually, I could tell you thousands of ways we customized it.
The program officially launched today, but has been available for students for a couple of weeks. So far, about 2,000 students have used it. Erica Hardison teaches Algebra 1 at Dixie Hollins and said her students have responded well to Algebra Nation because it reaches them in ways they're already used to, and it doesn't feel like doing homework.
They know how to use Facebook like the back of their hand, so they just go on, log in. The wall is kind of like, if you guys are from, everybody's familiar with Facebook, but the wall is kind of like the old Facebook wall, and they're posting, and as soon as they get on it, they are like hooked for the most part. I had a student who is an excellent English student. He loves English, but he does not really, he hasn't found his joy, let me say, for mathematics yet. So I got him to get on it and sign up, and now he's like, did you see my post? And he's posting, he's helping other students, and he's really starting to explore mathematics.
The program is also available for middle school students taking Algebra 1. Apps are available for both Android platform and iPhones. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Janelle Irwin in Pinellas County.
Still to come on Capitol Report, as Florida lawmakers look to further change the state's retirement system, some say the state could again be taken to court.
Anytime you make major changes in someone's pensions, you're going to have lawsuits.
After what some say is more than 30 years, lawmakers are taking a look at ethics reform.
We want to trust again. You know, public trust and confidence in our government at all levels is low, so we need that to increase. So let's increase public trust and let's improve the reputation of Florida.
Do Florida's medical malpractice laws need major surgery? Some healthcare providers say yes. Lawyers and insurance companies say no.
I mean, an awful lot more work needs to be done before the legislature should seriously move with this.
And once again, some in the legislature are trying to figure out how they might collect more taxes from online retailers. A legal battle between the state and employee unions has come to an end after a Florida Supreme Court decision validated changes to Florida's retirement system. Now, as Sasha Cordner reports, as state lawmakers look to change the system again, many unions are coming out against a proposal to do away with the state's pension plan and instead force future employees into a 401k type plan. That leaves some wondering, is history bound to repeat itself?
It took about 2 years for employee unions and the state to finish a fight over a law requiring public workers to contribute 3% of their pay toward their retirement. But now state lawmakers are looking to eliminate Florida's pension plan, the most popular retirement option.
Well, I certainly expect that there will be lawsuits about it.
That's University of South Florida political scientist Susan McManus, who says the legislature could have another fight on their hands.
But the question is, the fiscal side of it. Do states have the legal constitutional right to protect the future finances of the state? And that's going to be one of the key arguments, I believe, in this battle.
In addition to getting rid of the pension plan, the proposal calls for new employees hired after January 1st, 2014, to go into the state's other retirement option, the investment 401k-style plan. Some lawmakers, like Democratic Representative Irv Slaugsburg, question the legislature's motivation.
Everything we've heard indicates that the Florida retirement system is one of the best retirement systems in the country. What exactly are we trying to fix here?
Republican Representative Jason Broder, who introduced the proposal, agrees that the state's current retirement system is, quote, actuarially sound. But he says that may not always be the case, adding that he's looking at what adding more workers into the system could cost taxpayers in the future.
This is an opportunity for us. While we're still in decent shape, remember the actuary said that in the next 10 to 15 years it could get rough, we would rather make a small change to the aircraft now than turn a speedboat 90 degrees in 10 years.
House Speaker Will Weatherford has commissioned a study to look at its financial impact, and the House Government Operations Subcommittee is not expected to move forward on actual legislation before the results are in. Meanwhile, Rich Templin of the AFL-CIO points to the last study commissioned by lawmakers when they last considered doing the same thing.
In the first year, it's going to cost $150 million. In the second year, $300 million. In the third year, $450 million. And that trend continues until 2018. We are looking at potentially billions of dollars in taxpayer revenue simply to fix a system which we're still not sure what the problem with that system is.
So far, only about 25% of about 600,000 employees have opted into the investment plan, which many unions say shows just how popular the current pension system already is. Rowan Taylor, president of the Metro Dade International Association of Firefighters, says if lawmakers do away with the secure pension plan, it would expose many to the uncertainties of the marketplace contained in the state's investment option. He says that could change the mindset of future employees.
When we're going forward into a fire to fight a fire, to put our lives on the line, you shouldn't have to worry about the market is doing really bad right now.
Despite employee unions' reservations, all expressed a willingness to work with the committee to come to an agreement on the proposal. But USF political scientist Susan McManus says should they not come to a resolution, a lawsuit could be certain. But she's not so sure how successful it could be.
The question mark is, since so many governments are already moving in this direction, is this so unusual that a lawsuit would prevail? And, of course, we won't know that until we see the particulars if lawsuits are filed.
The draft proposal is modeled after something similar in Alaska and Michigan. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kordner.
And get this, Florida leads the country for the number of public officials convicted of federal corruption charges. Some say that's clear evidence that the state has a real ethics problem. Some lawmakers and activists have been pushing for ethics reform for years. And as Regan McCarthy reports, this coming session, a new ethics measure is expected to be one of the first bills passed out of the legislature.
The most common ethics infractions are small, like turning a financial disclosure form in late or leaving out a little information. And it's something Senator John Thrasher says most lawmakers have done.
I suspect that every one of us, I bet you, every one of us sitting here today probably has made some kind of mistake on our financial disclosure, including myself.
But Dan Krasner, the executive director of the government watchdog group Integrity Florida, says sometimes even mistakes involving seemingly small things like financial disclosure forms aren't that innocent.
There have been plenty of cases where someone received a gift. In the case of former state senator Jim Norman, his wife received a gift from a political fundraiser and friend of the family of a $500,000 home in Arkansas, and that home was left off the form. And we understand that the senator consulted with an attorney, and there are attorneys out there. Some give good advice, some give bad advice.
And former Senate President Mike Haridopoulos was publicly scolded in 2011 for an ethics breach when he left information off his financial disclosure form. Krasner says corruption happens on all levels of government and regardless of party. And he says putting an end to it is important.
Because we want to trust again. You know, public trust and confidence in our government at all levels is low, so we need that to increase. So let's increase public trust and let's improve the reputation of Florida.
The Florida Senate Ethics and Elections Committee bill would help clear up those disclosure problems. It would give lawmakers time to fix any mistakes they did make once those mistakes are brought to their attention. It would also let officials file reports online. And Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala, who introduced the bill, says it also gives the Florida Commission on Ethics more teeth to collect fines from people who fail to take care of their forms or errors on time.
My personal opinion, as someone who's been around the process of the legislature and politics in Florida for 30 or 40 years now, that this is, I believe, the most comprehensive attempt at ethics reform that we have had in at least 30 years in Florida.
The measure also requires constitutionally elected officers to take an ethics training course and puts more rules in place for the use of special political funds, also known as CCEs, or Committees of Continuous Existence, a fund Latvala says has been heavily abused in the past.
What we're trying to get away from is the members who kind of ruined this and by basically using them every day during session to entertain their friends.
Former Representative Chris Dorworth received a lot of media attention for what some say was a misuse of his CCE. Though Dorworth was in financial trouble, he was able to keep up what critics call a lavish lifestyle through the use of his CCE. Latvala says that's the kind of thing the law would be intended to stop. The measure also addresses a rule that prohibits lawmakers from lobbying the legislature for 2 years after retiring. Under the state's current rules, there's no wait time before they can lobby the governor and executive offices, a loophole former House Speaker Dean Cannon appears poised to take advantage of with the launch of his new lobbying firm. The Senate measure would bar such practices in the future. Krasner, who's been one of the leading forces pushing for ethics reform in the state, says he likes the direction the measure's taking, especially when it comes to enforcement. The measure passed out of the Senate Ethics and Elections Committee unanimously, though it received some criticism from the Florida League of Cities for an amendment on one provision that would extend the measure's dual employment prohibition to local officials. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tramell Gomes. It now looks likely that Florida lawmakers will at least consider doing something about medical malpractice tort reform this year. But Tom Flanagan reports there are differing ideas about what should be done.
One group that's pushing for reform is called Patients for Fair Compensation. It's based in Alpharetta, Georgia, a state that's also considering changes to its medical malpractice laws. The group is chaired by Rick Jackson. He's also chairman and chief executive officer of Jackson Healthcare, the nation's third largest healthcare staffing company.
The current system takes a long time, doesn't give fair compensation. Less than 80% of the people that deserve compensation don't get it. It drives up healthcare costs by 25 to 30%.
So Jackson's group is proposing an alternative. Instead of patients having to sue negligent healthcare providers, how about a no-fault automatic settlement setup similar to the current workers' compensation system?
There's still some adversarial elements of workers' comp, but our system is a lot easier to navigate and get to the answer very quickly. And that's what we're trying to do.
Less muss and fuss, no need to pit patient against provider in lengthy and costly lawsuits. Charles Evans is vice chair of Patients for Fair Compensation. He's also president of International Health Services Group and senior advisor to Jackson Healthcare.
In this system, there is no blame structured. So the physician can actually stand with the patient and talk about how things might have gone differently and the need for the patient to receive compensation and not be penalized in that process.
Sarasota ophthalmologist Dr. Tim Rousey says he sees nothing but advantages to adopting a no-fault medical malpractice arrangement.
Gets the physicians out of court, the patients out of court. It reduces the time to reimbursement from the current system of 3 to 5 years to 180 days. And the patients are reasonably comfortable if they've had an adverse event or an avoidable medical injury, they will be paid.
If trial lawyers are reluctant to take many medical malpractice cases, and if the present settlement system is considered unwieldy and drawn out, Deborah Hendley, who heads the Florida Justice Association, says the fault lies elsewhere.
Well, with all the restrictions and barriers they have placed in front of patients to bring a medical malpractice case, they've made it incredibly difficult for patients. And so the remedy there would be to remove some of these barriers and unnecessary expenses to allow patients to access their right support.
There's even some debate over whether or not there's actually a problem that needs solving right now. Sam Miller is with the Florida Insurance Council. He admits that wasn't the case a decade ago when big trouble with the system compelled the legislature to take up the medical malpractice issue.
We also fashioned a very important package of revisions in 2003 that have caused more and more doctors to come to Florida and stay in Florida in most lines of treatment. More medical malpractice insurers are in Florida, 22 now. We've had several new ones the last 2 or 3 years. Rates have stabilized, certainly compared to where they were before the crisis.
And Miller says, so far at least, the Patients for Fair Compensation folks seem to be a lone voice in the legislative wilderness.
You know, the Florida Medical Association has serious concerns about this proposal. The insurers do. They're not even sponsors yet. These are good faith efforts, but, an awful lot more work needs to be done before the legislature should seriously move with this.
Still, the state's medical association, trial lawyers, and insurers think there could be some helpful tweaks to the present medical malpractice system. How many of these tweaks might actually show up in legislation, though, remains to be seen. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Finally, the idea of Florida collecting more taxes from online retailers is getting bipartisan support among state lawmakers. As Jessica Palumbo reports, what was once an idea pushed mainly by Democrats is getting the attention of Republicans now that Florida businesses are calling for relief.
Kim Williams owns a stationery and party supply store called the Polka Dot Press in Tallahassee.
We try to outservice everybody. I mean, I preach that in my store to my staff.
She says that service is her competitive edge because when she sets her retail prices on things like napkins and cards, she has a hard time competing with online sellers' prices. She says it's because Florida doesn't collect sales tax from out-of-state retailers who sell their merchandise through the internet. Anyone who's ever browsed for something in a store before buying the same item online, tax-free, knows what she's up against.
From a store owner standpoint, it would really level the playing field and allow us to be more competitive with other brands.
Williams is not alone in her frustration. John Fleming, a spokesman for the Florida Retail Federation, says some Florida store owners must collect 8% more in taxes than out-of-state online sellers do.
There is a built-in price disadvantage for them. The state sales tax is 6%. Local option taxes add on another percent or two to that.
And he says the problem is twofold. The other part of the loophole, he says, is if a seller doesn't have a physical presence in the state, like a brick-and-mortar store, Florida law leaves it up to the buyer to report how much use tax they owe on every online purchase.
There is a loophole big enough to drive a delivery truck through.
Fleming says his federation advocates tweaking the definition of physical presence a retailer has in a state. For example, that could mean if they have a distribution center instead of just a storefront, they'd have to collect sales tax. And he says other large states are trending that way.
New York has done something about it. Amazon.com, the biggest internet-only retailer, is collecting in New York. They're doing it in Texas. They're doing it in California. So of the big four, Florida is the last one to address this issue.
The Florida Department of Revenue, which is tasked with enforcing tax collection, tries to educate people that they must pay use tax on online purchases. Mark Zitch with the department says last year people voluntarily reported $6.6 million in use taxes to the state, and Florida recovered an additional $9 million by inspecting things like customs records and the inventories of tractor trailers driving in from out of state.
We will see if someone has bought furniture from North Carolina or art from other places, and then we will write them saying, have you paid tax on it?
But even though the state targets shippers to collect use taxes, Dominic Calabro with the think tank Florida Tax Watch says state law is not keeping up with the explosive growth in online sales, and that means more and more taxes are going uncollected.
We haven't been doing enough to make this a real key priority, and in the meantime, the red ink has been pouring and jobs have been lost in Florida because of this.
Florida Tax Watch estimates that if Florida were to expand the definition of what constitutes physical retail presence in the state, it would collect $50 million in taxes the first year. Bills that have been filed in the House and Senate would do just that. One sponsored by Venice Republican Senator Nancy Dietert would define physical retail presence as an office, distribution facility, or warehouse. Senator Gwen Margolis and Representative Jared Moskowitz, both Democrats, have filed similar bills. And House Speaker Will Weatherford and Senate President Don Gates have said they support taking a close look at online sales tax law. But even if Florida starts collecting more online taxes, advocates for the change point out there's only so much the state can collect under the Federal Commerce Clause. That's why Tax Watch, the Florida Retail Federation, and others are lobbying Congress for a more uniform policy on internet sales. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. Thanks also to public radio stations around the state. Taylor Cox provided technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org.
Capitol Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sam's, saluting its client Seaside Community Development Corporation for supporting arts and culture in South Walton County. I'm David Powell of Hopping Green and Sam's in Tallahassee.
The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. And from the Florida Historic Capitol Museum, illuminating the connection between the people of Florida and their political institutions through programs of civic education, historic interpretation, and preservation. Information at 850-487-1902. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.